Do your children have questions about the Bible? Let them come through on Kids Perspective on Adventist World Radio SID Media on the second Friday of every month to ask their questions. Text us on +27 73 470 3520 for a spot on the show. Adventist World Radio SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, many of us allow our spending habits to wreak havoc on our finances. Our talk this evening will focus on some financial sins to avoid in order to bring some stability into our bank accounts now and perhaps in the long run as well. So some of our listeners may know Lulu Ncube from the Financial Tips Corner on Facebook, where she regularly shares financial management and holistic stewardship tips, and she's joining us this evening to have this conversation with us. Good evening, Lulu.
Good evening, Tabula. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. How was your day?
My day was, it was busy, but very productive, I must say.
Busy is good.
Same for you.
They say busy is good. So whenever you're not busy, you must know there is a problem, right? what's the time that side?
It's 7:16.
7:16. Look at that. Hey, yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we really appreciate your time. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Professionally, I am a chartered accountant. I'm also a registered auditor.
Yeah.
I have a passion for personal finances, strategic leadership, and just helping people in our Adventist circles understand, gain financial literacy, because I really believe that's quite important. And I have a vast array of experience in the commercial sector and, just understanding finances in general. So this is my profession. So in a nutshell, that's who I am. I've also been in Namibia, working for also the Namibia South Conference as a CFO day. So, I believe that's just me.
Fantastic. Where did the passion for personal finance actually start, or where did it come from?
It actually came after my varsity studies, when I, found myself in this ripple effect of bad habits. And coming out of a credible educational institution, I thought, well, I have a degree now in accounting. Probably, that should also filter into how I manage funds.
Yes.
And when I started failing dismally, I realized that, this is a skill that is not necessarily taught, at varsity level. We are taught to work for money, but we're not essentially taught how to manage money, how to make money, and how to also keep money. So, when I started learning and investing time and educating myself to acquire these skills, I just developed a great passion to teach others, not to fall into the same traps.
I love that. I think that a lot of people in the financial or personal finance space often draw these lessons from their own mishaps, I suppose, with finances. And I really love that, because then, the passion behind it is palpable, even in how people present these sort of things. So I find that quite interesting. Growing up, were you taught about money?
Yes. The first principle that I learned about managing money was to put God first.
Yeah.
My dad is a staunch believer in putting God first and in tithing and offering.
Yeah.
So I would get pocket money, and I was really taught, and these principles were instilled in me at an early age, to give a 10% even of my pocket money.
Yeah.
Making it easier already, it ingrained those principles that whatever it is that I do, whether I make money, create, whatever, I should always think of God first. And that also helped to seal, the understanding of just how to use money thereafter, and also to know that even the 90% that is left to me is not also supposed to be used recklessly. But, somewhere along the line, we lose the principle. And then
we do.
We get back at some point. So, it was mostly from that Christian perspective that I learned to manage money. And obviously, raised in an Adventist family. Mm. You know, my father is not the type also, and my parents, you know, they were not the type to be spoiling us when it came to money. If there were no funds for something that you wanted or desired, you were not going to get it until the funds were made available. So it also filtered out, you know, that instant gratification. Mm. I always wanted to have things now when I desire them, but just learning to wait, until the proper time.
Mm, that's amazing. I'd like to talk about the financial tips corner in just a moment from now. But let's start here, maybe, as we open up this particular discussion. Tell us a little bit more about the idea that we have no control over our financial situations, especially that the economy that we live in is just a mess. So what does that actually mean, taking control over our finances in a messy economy?
You know, that's very true. We don't have control over the economy at this point in time. You have the ever-rising interest rates, the hikes, you know, 50 basis points every other month, you know. And for those who have mortgage bonds or loans, it's really terrifying, you know, to think about the constant rise of prices. Mm. And you find that your income is still fixed, but there's the cost of living is just increasing by the day. Mm. And that's why it's essential that we need to protect our financial health. Mm. You know, we are fond of, you know, learning more about being physically fit and being mentally fit. Mm. But if we're not financially fit, we will find that it will filter not only into our mental, but as well as our physical unfitness. Yeah. So you learn to then subsist with the means that you have. So if my financial subsistence is not going up, how can I create other sources of income, you know, to help me survive this economy that I don't have direct control over, you know? Or if I have a sufficient amount of income that is coming in on a monthly basis, how can I manage such that I am not distressed at the end of the day? So it's important that we learn to manage money as opposed to money managing us. So we need to disempower, you know, money by learning its purpose and its uses. And, you know, when you follow the principles of financial intelligence, it will help you guide that financial fitness and well-being.
I love that. We need to learn to manage money than to let money manage us. Because that can be a mess when money is managing you. Because it knows no emotions whatsoever.
Yes. Totally.
It just leaves. I mean, it comes into your bank account out the same way it came in. And so whether you are crying or you're not crying, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't care.
That's how it operates, and you'll have to find a way around that. So I love that. We need to learn to manage money, and we shouldn't let money manage us there. So let's talk to the sins then. You know, I was saying to myself, you know, we sin religiously, you know, we sin with our families, we sin. There's also financial sins now. It seems like there's so many sins that we are dealing with on a daily basis. Like, where do I even start? Like, when I pray, I'm like, oh, goodness. And now I need to pray for my financial sins as well. I didn't realize that I had financial sins. What are these financial sins?
So, I mean, the list of the 10 financial sins is not an exhaustive list.
Yeah.
You know, there's more out there. But these are the ones that, you know, they're the ones, you know, that have the main caveats that will help us to understand our financial behavior and habits that end up costing us more than they benefit us.
Yeah.
And, you know, normally when you have a list, it allows the mind to just refocus on that. Okay, so if I'm saying 10 financial sins, you know, like you were saying, it doesn't feel like an overload of information.
Yeah.
And you can just take it in as easily as it comes and assess your life, determine where you're at and what needs to be corrected.
Before you give us the first one, a comment coming through saying it doesn't even sit down in the account. So that's how, money always is a problem. It doesn't even sit down in the account. So there you go. Seems like money is a problem. Yeah. Sin number one.
So the first thing here that I have listed is to strive to be unemotional with your purchasing. I mean, we've already this pattern. You know, money knows no emotion. And most times we link, you know, your understanding your emotions to behavioral psychology.
Mm.
And we also link it to you having that financial intelligence. And emotions generally should not be dictating how you spend money, because we know that feelings are volatile. Today you're happy, you're excited, tomorrow you're sad, and it's very easy to make emotional decisions without thinking through, you know, thinking through them. And then when you return to reason, you find that you've locked yourself in decisions that you had no business, you know, entering into. In your spur of excitement, you can spend your entire salary trying to please people. In your spur of sadness, you can, you know, you can spend to be filling a void that can't even be filled by the things that you're busy spending on. So it's very, very important that when we are purchasing or spending, we use reason over and above our emotions. And we try also to avoid autopilot spending or inertia. Because we waste a lot of funds without applying our minds wisely. Why are you spending or not you're spending? What are you trying to achieve at the end of the day? You know, you need to apply your mind, because if you just let your mind be an autopilot, you'll be broke very easily. And just lastly on that, to understand that emotional decision-making can affect not just the outcome of your decision, but the speed at which you make it. You know, you just made a remark right now. You get paid, and before you know it, that money's gone. You know,
it's out.
Exactly. And we are shocked. How did this, how did we arrive at this? And, you know, with emotions as well, we need to bridge the gap between comfort and contentment, as well as needs and luxuries. I know the Bible has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to being content with what we have. It's not to say do not strive. You strive, but, you know, when we are constantly spending on needs in a luxurious manner, it then says something about, you know, the voice that we're trying to cover up with these things. And I use examples of cars, houses, and clothes. These are needs. We need them, you know. But we need to understand that when they are now filtering into our budget luxuriously, I'm buying a bedroom, a house with 10 bedrooms when I only need 2 bedrooms. I'm buying a $2 million car that I can't even afford, when I can buy a cheaper car that achieves the same purpose. With clothes, I'm buying brand names that nobody even cares about. You know, the sad part is that we will spend so much on just 5 minutes of glory, which will cost us 5 years paying off that consumer debt. And, you know, that 5 minutes of glory, people, you know, people have their own problems. They'll just give you that glory for 5 minutes.
And then they,
you know,
move
they're interested in, and they'll move on with their lives. But you are stuck with this debt. You're not sleeping at night, you know, just for 5 minutes of glory. And you ask yourself the question, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? So it's not. It's really not worth it. And, you know, it's okay. It's okay to admit yourself when you can't afford something. And, you know, this generation, as I said earlier, it thrives on buying now and paying later. It's instant gratification is killing many of us. And if you analyze all of this, it has to do with our emotions and our behavioral psychology. And if we study ourselves, understand these voids, you know, and this emptiness that we are suffering from, we would not be spending unwisely.
So strive to be unemotional about our purchasing and our spending. Comment, that was me signing a 2-year contract at the gym last year. Emotional decisions. So it sounds like Swangley didn't go to gym. She just signed up.
And a lot of us do that. And I'm going to talk about that a bit later.
Yeah.
That's the ninth mental thing that many of us commit.
Yeah. So there you go. Strive to be unemotional. That's interesting. And that's interesting. I'm writing that one. Yeah.
And then should I move on to the next one?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the second financial sin is skipping payments or making payments late on your credit. If you're going to have any form of credit, be aware that it's essential that you need to pay that credit at the time that you committed to pay it, you know, because when you skip those payments, it starts having a ripple effect on your credit scores as well as your credit history. And you don't want that, you know. You find that there are many of us as well who start becoming clever with our credit, because we realize that actually we entered into debts that we can't afford. We start, you know, playing games, you know, with the credit. You know, as soon as your salary hits your bank account, instead of honoring those payments or those debit orders, you transfer those funds into your other bank account so that you utilize them on other things. You skip this month, hoping to catch up next month. You know, it's like you're playing this hopping game with your credit. And there will come a time when really you need the credit for serious endeavors, such as buying a house, etc. And you're wondering, why am I not being considered? Why am I being turned down? It's because of this. You know, you're teaching the credit providers, you know, to have very little trust in you. And that's detrimental. It's detrimental, because not only does it just affect your credit scores, you know, wherever you go in life, whether it's, you know, potential employers, if they are interested in how you are managing your credit as well, you know, it could cost you opportunities.
And we never think about that. So if someone is in that predicament, what's the best thing to do? Is it to go back to them and say, look, I can't afford this. Maybe I can afford something less?
My best bet on that one, you know, again, the bank is really not interested in your excuses. If they get their money, they want their money back. And if it's possible to renegotiate your payment terms, that would be great. But in a situation where you cannot, then you have to get to a point where you restructure your lifestyle or restructure your finances, essentially, to meet your commitments. And you see, the longer you stay in debt, the more it costs you. So if you're able to relinquish that debt as early as possible, the better. And I know many of us have ended up in debts, especially consumer debt, that we, you know, we didn't think through at the time. And, you know, life changes, maybe your salary drops at some point, you change jobs, and you can't sustain it. But I would just urge, at that point, you know, there's some sacrifices that need to be made. If I was, you know, staying in a, again, let me take the three-bedroom house, maybe I need to downscale and just have a one-bedroom house. If I'm driving a very expensive car, it's fine. Let the image and the status go. You know, I would have to probably sell that car. Let me repay the debts. Because, you know, I like what the Bible also tells us. The borrower is a slave to the lender. And you don't understand the financial freedom that comes to knowing you're not owing somebody. Waking up in the morning at 4 a.m. to be told you're owing us funds. You know, and when the bank wants their money, they really want it. They will not stop at anything. So I would say it's just essential to just, you know, cut down on, you know, your level of comfort. At that point in time, prioritize what needs to be paid and probably learn and just learn from it going forward.
Okay, skipping payments is not good for our credit profile at all. Okay, that's another sin there.
And then the third one is not knowing where your money goes on a monthly basis. You know, we are just living from paycheck to paycheck and it just becomes a norm. Did you know that your financial habits are already formed by the time you're 7 years old? So you learn these, you know, either your parents, or your guardians, the environment around you. So at age 7, to a certain extent, really, it's been sealed almost for the rest of your life how you're going to be handling money. But, you know, we know the grace message.
You know, God,
he's a God of second chances.
Yeah.
But essentially, we don't keep a budget and we end up in this frivolous, we end up spending frivolously. You know, it's a financial sin, a huge financial sin not to keep a budget. But again, there are many people who have a budget on paper. Okay, so on a monthly basis, I know that I'm supposed to be paying so and such amount for my operational costs, etc. It's on paper. But then the actual spending,
it's
not there. And that's why we need to reconcile the actual with the budget. You know, at the end of the month or when I've spent on what I budgeted, it's very important. And why do we need a budget? A budget registers your intention. This is what I want to use my funds on, right? And then the actual registers your habits and your relationship with money. So those two at any given point in time need to talk to each other. And if there is a gap, a huge gap between them, then it just shows you where really you need to be adjusting. You need to be adjusting your life and where you are now spending recklessly. And again, as we always say, if you don't plan, you are planning to fail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Note.
Moving on to the fourth part.
Yeah.
Not having emergency funds to weather your storms in times of a crisis. We need to remember that we're still on Earth, and on Earth, life is not going to be perfect. You know, there's going to be a cycle of events that will happen unforeseen, and you know, you need to plan for them so that you don't end up living a distressed life. And then you find that we end up in this, financially distressed and wallowing back into bad habits because we have not disciplined ourselves to prepare for the rainy days. They will come. And Proverbs 21:20 says the wise save for the future. But the foolish, they spend everything that they get. So put money away, you know, for whatever form of emergency. And I know now we have insurance covers. You know, you can put money away for funeral covers, life covers, plan for them. You know, don't neglect them. When those rainy days do come, you don't want to find yourself wanting.
Yeah.
Then the fifth one is living on overdraft. And I know this is very, very common. You know, the banks are always ready to leash these overdrafts. And many people feel comfortable having overdrafts because they feel, well, I have a salary anyway. So, I mean, the only buffer that you need is a salary constantly coming in on a monthly basis. But then the question is, again, you have not planned for the unforeseen event. What happens the day you're retrenched? What happens the day that salary stops coming in or that salary is reduced? what now? And the bank, remember, the bank is not emotional about
this.
Yeah,
no, they're not.
They want their money.
Yeah.
They will want their money. And you don't want to find yourself distressed because now, you know, with these overdrafts, you're constantly living in this life of this ripple effect of just debt, you know. And we're trying to encourage people to come out of debt. You know, Ellen White even says, look upon debt as you would look upon leprosy.
Yeah.
The way you would flee from leprosy is the way you should flee from debt. Yeah. At no point in time should you be comfortable with it unless and except that debt is actually building more resources or wealth, you know, and bringing in more returns for you. But that needs to be properly calculated. But if that is not the case, then you really have no business, you
being
know, having all these unnecessary overdrafts. It's really not necessary. Yeah, it's not. The sixth one is buying cars on balloon payments and houses on extended credit terms. And I know this one is also prevalent. Again, you know, you're trying to maintain a certain lifestyle. Really, the reality is if you're going to buy a car on a balloon payment, it goes to show that to a certain extent, you do not have the deposit. And if you can't afford it now, what makes you think that you'll afford it in the future? You know, and in the times that we're living in now, things are just getting worse by the years. You know, why buffer or why try to get comfort when, you know, on a future that is so uncertain, with these ever rising interest rates? So you find that people, you know, enter into these balloon arrangements and they never come out of it because with the balloon arrangement, so it's one of three things. At the end of the term, there's this lump sum that you need to pay up. So you should have already saved up for that. You know, you should have the cash. And many times people don't have the cash. They realize, you know, at the end, oh, shoot, I don't have the money. And the other option is to either, you know, give back the asset. It could be a house or it could be a car. And most times, well, you don't want to give back the house. You don't want to give back the car and, you know, be left with nothing. So then what then happens is that you either trade in that car and you enter into another installment arrangement or credit arrangement. You know, for another car so as to keep up with this, or even for, you know, you enter into another credit arrangement in order to cover this balloon payment. And can you see what it's doing again? You're creating this ripple effect of debt. And many people never come out of that cycle of debt. You're in this prison of trying to sustain this lifestyle and trying to maintain these things, but it's costing you more than it's actually benefiting you. That's why we never really get far, you know, because we're just moving in the cycle of things. And remember, a car is not necessarily an asset.
It's not.
It depreciates the moment it comes out of that. It's over time, you're just spending money on something that is just not giving you the value at the end of the day. And then the other one is buying houses on extended credit terms. And I know I have had friends who've entered into this thinking this is a lucrative deal because obviously on a monthly basis you're paying less than you would normally pay. So somebody who's taken it over 20 years compared to 30 years, you're paying less monthly. But when you actually add it up, you end up paying 2 to 3 times the value of the capital. And I ask, is that worth it at the end of the day? It's not worth it. You know, because had you been smart about it, that extra interest that you have been paying on that house, you could have been investing in something worthwhile, you know. And again, you know, sometimes we say a house is an investment. A house is an investment from the time that you've ceased paying that mortgage. But before, it belongs to the bank. You know, you're literally just renting it from the bank. And remember, in the first 10 years for a 20-year term or, you know, mortgage, you're just paying on interest. It's just interest. And then you start putting the capital earlier. That's why we always encourage people, if you have a little buffer that you can add on your monthly payments, it will save that you cut on the interest repayment. So that the interest is generally the cost of borrowing the funds. And it also affects the time value of money. So if you can cut down on that, the better. The better. And then utilize those funds on something that is quite worthwhile. Let's invest.
Before you move on this one, especially about the housing, you know, we are always taught that the housing is an investment. And and you raise a very important point to say, well, it's not an investment until you pay it off. I mean, that's 20 years or 30 years, depending if you took those extended credit terms and all that, which you know, you rightfully said, it's not advisable to do that. Because I think if you're going to take a house, same as a car, if you're going to take it on an extended repayment means you can't afford that car. Maybe look at a car that's less than what you're looking to buy. You know, people who look at a house as an investment, you know, like you're saying, until you pay it off, it's actually not an investment. Can you just expand a little bit on that? Because I think it's a very important thing, because that's the last thing we think about. We see this nice house, like, yo, we're always taught that a house is an investment. And once you are in, 2 years in, you start realizing the interest rates go up and now you can't pay. This thing is no longer an investment, but a burden on you now. Because sometimes a house is not easily liquid, right? Because you can't sometimes dispose it off as quickly as you would cash and other types of assets as well. This thing, where does it come from and why are we always told that it's an investment?
Okay. So if we're going to look at a house as a form of an investment, we just need to then understand the definition of an investment.
Yeah.
It needs to yield returns. So the capital that you're investing has to yield more returns.
Yeah.
So it creates more assets for you.
Yeah.
And if I've just purchased a residential house, I'm the only one just staying there with my husband and my children, you know, it's more operational.
Yeah.
It's a source of shelter for us. So in that sense, it hasn't created an asset for us, you know. Because if I default on my repayments within that 20-year period, the bank can repossess it, and it's gone, just like that. But then there are people who are clever in converting that into an investment.
Mm.
So if I then decide to purchase this house, and instead of staying in it, I rent it out. Now I'm generating rental income.
Mm.
That rental income is now the added asset, you know, because it's brought in returns on this capital that I'm actually spending on, which is actually to my advantage, you know.
Yeah.
And you find that some people who have, you know, backyards and, you know, you can convert that into a student accommodation and it generates an income for you that helps you to pay off your mortgage. So in that sense, you can turn it into an investment. But literally, if it's just you living in it and it's just serving the purpose of being a shelter, in that time period when you're paying it off, I wouldn't regard that as an investment.
Yeah.
But when it has paid off, yes, then it's now fully yours. It's an asset.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
And then the seventh one is being repossessed by lifestyle inflation.
Mm.
You know, so you get a raise at work and then all of a sudden you think that, you know, you owe it to your lifestyle. You need to upgrade your lifestyle. You need to change, you know, your hangout sports. You need to change your eating habits. And all of a sudden, you're taking trips around the world.
Yeah.
That you think you have, but you actually don't have.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this lifestyle inflation also goes back to that behavioral psychology.
Yes.
You know, who are we trying to impress? Why are we trying to live a life of gaining status and, you know, trying to win people's approval based on the things that we have.
Mm.
And this lifestyle inflation, by the way, doesn't just only occur for people who are rich.
Mm.
It can occur for just about anybody. You don't have to be wealthy to suffer from lifestyle inflation, you know. And you find that even if you are to get a raise at your workplace, because of lifestyle inflation, you adjust your life. That raise is simply now just paying off the debts. It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter how much money you are earning.
Mm.
It doesn't build any change in your life. You know, it's not like you are advancing your investments. No, you're not. It's just consumer debt again that you're stuck in.
Mm.
And it's really, again, is it worth it? You know, that's why we always need to apply financial intelligence.
Mm.
Living a life to competing with the Joneses, to please people for just that 5 minutes of glory, it's really, really not worth it. You know, your income has gone up, but if your spending is going up, then you're not achieving financial freedom. You're not. You're just stuck again in this debt.
Mm. We want to be on Instagram.
Yeah.
Solocations and vacations and whatcations. Yeah, that's what we like. And it's a lifestyle inflation, like you said. It's killing us.
Exactly. It's really, really killing us. Yeah. And I mean, already we have to deal with the actual inflation.
Hey, now you add another problem.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Lifestyle inflation. All right.
Yeah. The eighth one, you know, this one is very, you know, it's very close to my heart because I've seen it happening a lot with our Adventist counterparts. They enter into these get-rich-quick schemes, you know. And you would think we are reading Ellen White, we're reading the Bible, we should know better. But, you know, we are sometimes at the forefront of advocating for these get-rich-quick schemes.
Yep.
And again, you know, where there is no knowledge, you know, we suffer. You know, the Bible says, my people perish because of lack of knowledge. We invest so many, you know, so much, you know, funds into these schemes, hoping that they will generate returns.
Yeah.
But because we don't understand the nature of how Ponzi schemes, pyramid schemes work, essentially they're just benefiting those that are at the top. You know? And at some point, that's why it's a pyramid. You know, it's a pyramid. At some point, it is bound to crush. And when it crashes, it's always the people at the bottom that suffer.
Sure.
You know, and your promised dreams that just, you know, it's just a fantasy. It doesn't exist. And then there's some work who've gotten away with it. You know, they may benefit from this. But then the question that I would like to ask, why would you want to play Russian roulette with your money? Why would you want to do that? You know, I've seen people disinvest their pension funds. I've seen people or their retirement funds and, you know, utilizing these on these get-rich-quick schemes. And when they crash badly because this is a speculative, you know, venture. There's no guarantee. It's like you're gambling with your money. Why would you want to do that, really? And then what we've also found is that, you know, people who've experienced the crushing of these Ponzi or pyramid schemes, you would think that they would have learned their lesson. But what we've discovered is that they end up getting into other get-rich-quick schemes because it's now a mentality issue. They are not in the business of sowing seeds to generate the wealth, you know. And, you know, wealth gotten hastily also crushes hastily.
Yeah, true.
You know, but, you know, when you allow time for you to grow in whatever venture you are in, you know, you also develop the right discipline to manage those funds. And so you find that they're back again because now what is driving this is the love of money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. You know, you will be broke very quickly chasing after money. Very quickly. You know, but if we follow the wise words of Solomon, you know, he asked for wisdom and money kept following him. It kept following him. Yeah.
Sure.
So now I always say with this one, avoidance is better than cure. Yeah. You don't have to learn the hard way. Just avoid it.
Okay.
The ninth one is now the autopilot bill paying. Earlier somebody was talking about the gym subscription. You know? And you know, with these automated payments, it's a great way of avoiding or racking up, you know, late fees. But again, as I said earlier, inertia or autopilot can just set in very quickly. You end up paying for subscriptions that you don't use. And you need to manage these subscriptions. And when you realize that now, you know, whether it's for channels on TV or gym subscriptions, whatever it is that you're paying for, and you realize that the cost is now outweighing the benefit, seize them. You'd rather rechannel those funds in some investment scheme that will yield returns in the long term, as opposed to just donating funds or money. You know, that's just costing you more than it's benefiting you. So in that regard, it's not worth it. And you know, it can be small money here and there. It could be a 200 rands every month. And it seems like it's just little money. I mean, I think he was talking about 700 rands.
Yeah.
But when you calculate that over, you know, a year, that's close to 1,000 rands. That's close to, you know, if it's 200 rands, that's close to 2,400 rands. Imagine if you had invested that money, the returns that you could have generated over time. But because we are not really interested in the compounding effect that we accrue when we've invested our funds, we end up losing more in this. It's dollar count. Each cent counts. That's how we need to treat money. Let's not waste it.
Sure.
And then the last one
is
spending on junk food.
Junk food. And,
junk food. And unfortunately, you know, because it is junk food, we know it's also unhealthy food.
Yes.
It also creates health conditions.
Yeah.
And be preventable, you know, and, you know, many of us have these poor diet choices and they've contributed to lifestyle diseases like obesity, you know, type 2 diabetes, strokes, heart diseases, And it's simply because we did not know or did not apply our minds to, you know, taking care of these machines that are supposed to be generating the funds. You know, in the Adventist circles, we talk about the health message, which is the right arm of the gospel. But in the same light, if you are eating right, if you're exercising regularly, you know, you will become healthy. And, it, you know, it's also healthy for your finances. So junk food is very costly in the long term. You know, eating out every weekend or those funds, again, if you start adding them up, you realize you're wrecking, you know, a large amount in, into a lifestyle that can be avoided. That really, really can be avoided. So essentially, you know, I then in summary, I would say it's important that we create a budget. It's important that we pay off our debt. It's important that we spend within our means. Actually, I wouldn't even advocate that we spend within our means. Because when you're spending within your means, you're breaking even. Spend below your means.
Below your
means. You know, save for emergencies. And then there's this concept of paying yourself first. And, I, you know, it's just the world term that is used to encourage us to invest in our retirement years, invest in worthwhile ventures that will yield more returns. You know, let's invest wisely as well. And then that way we'll be able to break free from these habits. And we can work towards building long-term financial security for ourselves and for our families.
Sure. What a comprehensive list. And I'm sitting here, thinking, does God forgive me then for these sins? Where do I start? Do I go to Him and say, Lord, as you forgive me other sins, can you also help me sort out these ones as well?
Yeah, actually reminded me of John 1 verse 9. John says, my dear beloved, I you know, I pray that you may not sin. But if any of you finds yourself having sin in sin, we have an advocate to the Father, Jesus Christ.
Amen.
But only if we are willing to unlearn and to learn from our mistakes. But if we continue perpetrating the same trajectories, unfortunately, it's not
going to
work in our favor.
I love that. I must say that I love that, because I think sometimes when we have these talks about money, we leave people morose about their financial situation. It's almost like, oh, they're telling me about my financial situation again, you know. But just to say, well, there is hope after this.
There's a lot of hope.
There's still a lot of hope. So that's amazing. And so just to close in on that one, final thoughts, hope. It can be done. One can get out of this, right?
Yes. If, you know, if you are willing to be made willing, nothing can be impossible. It's literally just taking yourself and understanding where you fit into this entire equation. Like I said, these are just 10, but they're not exhaustive. And if you just start by applying one, you know, the first thing that I always say, start by budgeting. You know, okay. But before, you know, from a Christian perspective, start by putting God first. Start by putting God first, and God will then give you the right desire so that you know what to spend on, when to spend on, and how to spend on it. You know, He creates the right balance in your life. And then you learn to budget, learn to stick within the budget, learn to invest. If you're currently stuck in debt, let's find a modality of paying off those debts. You know, there's the avalanche way of doing it. But be intentional about your money. Be very intentional about it, because it's very easy to lose yourself if you don't learn the skills of managing money. You know, just like we go to school to be accountants, we learn to be engineers. This is also another skill that we need to learn, you know, for ourselves personally. Because when we are personally fulfilled, you know, I believe we are a better asset and tool to the world that God has put us in.
Sure. That's amazing. Financial Tips Corner on Facebook. Where do people follow you? Are there other platforms as well?
So we have a financial, I mean, we are on Facebook currently and we are looking at expanding on YouTube. I've gotten a lot of those requests. So we are looking to expand to YouTube as well as Instagram. And, you know, the tips are always quite short, because we know that the concentration span is not there. You know, we're bombarded by so many things. But how can we cultivate you with the right information in a short space of time that can also be life-changing?
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, ma'am. Really appreciate your time. I think it's quite a comprehensive list, and a lot of our listeners, I'm sure they've benefited from it. For some who might have missed it, it's on YouTube. It's also on our podcast as well, so people can always go back to this conversation. But thank you so much, ma'am. May you have a good one. We really appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you so much, Tabelo, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. That was Ululu Ncube talking to us this evening about the financial sins. Hey, yeah, no, when we pray, guys, let's also pray for our financial sins. And if it so happens that you need to go to gym, kao yetu.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.